welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez. Lots of stuff. Let's just jump right in.
Lots of stuff. Gearing up for Mix.
I know. Look at all these sessions that we just announced.
That's right. I like a lot of the OData stuff coming from Pablo and from Jonathan Carter here.
Yeah. So an overview of MS Webstack of Love. Scott Hanselman session. That one seems like fun.
And five things you need to know about starting to use video and audio tags in HTML5. So what I think one of the things that I really love about the Mix sessions is they're not just like, you know, kind of 3,000 level. Yeah, they're like things I can take away and apply maybe even while I'm coding up in the session. So I think it's really cool.
Let's see. The other one I'm really interested in is the 50 performance tricks to make your HTML5 websites faster. Mm-hmm. So that's taken from real-world examples, and Jason Weber, the IE9 performance lead, is going to be giving that one, so that should be a really, really good one.
And, of course, Steve Mark's always a favorite. 10 things you didn't know you could do with Windows Azure.
Bart DeSmet, reactive extensions for JavaScript. So
yeah,
a lot of Niners love that, so that should be a good one.
That's right. All right.
So lots of cool stuff. Register. I will be there.
You will be there. I won't be. Yeah.
Embarrassing.
Yeah. I don't go to the shows that the Brian Peek goes to.
Oh, there's a clear separate.
Yeah.
I've never seen you two in the same room.
Yeah.
Actually.
It's actually we're the same person.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's good.
The truth is out.
That's good.
Yeah.
So I'm Giovanni's friend. Okay. Good. Dissecting IE9 networking.
Yeah, this is a really cool post by Eric Lawrence on the IE team, and
You might remember me from such utilities as
Fiddler.
Everybody knows Fiddler.
Everybody knows Fiddler. Everybody knows Eric Lawrence. And so he went into painstaking detail about the performance improvements that they've made in IE9, such as being able to cache the list of DNS providers that you'll need to go look up. Like if you visit blogs.msdn.com or the IE9 blog, there's like five other sites that you then need to go get the name resolution of.
Right.
And so rather than have to go check the site and say, okay, where are we going to go check today? You know, what are we going to do today, Pinky? instead, you can go just prefetch all that stuff because that's what you needed last time.
Yeah. So there's a lot of cool stuff. Just a ton of detail as well. I love posts like this. These are great posts. They, you know, dissecting what actually happens, the things that they saw in real world, and how they're optimizing for it.
That's right.
So definitely check this one out.
Yep. And speaking of IE9, if you have yet to go through and make sure that your site is compatible with IE9, mm-hmm. the IE9 compatibility cookbook can take you step by step and show you exactly what's been deprecated, exactly what's been added back in, exactly how to format things. So I'm migrating a lot of my sites right now, and I discovered that the blink tag is still not supported. So that's causing me a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, you have my write-in vote, and that's two.
IE10, I'm crossing my fingers. Or IE9 SP1, we'll find out.
Yeah. So other things to call out on here is one of the things that developers should do is make sure you're doing the right way to do browser versioning checks. So they have examples of JavaScript code to make sure like you're checking the right version. So for example, in websites, what you find is behavior where they, for example, said, if IE is greater than this, well, what happens when you have, you know, IE is greater than 7? Behavior for IE9 is wholly different than IE8. So what things can you do to basically map to specific values? What are the wrong things to do and so forth? So definitely check that out.
Cool. And also speaking of IE9 and some of the new HTML5 support.
I know.
These are some really cool samples. And so this is from our friend Lutz Roeder.
From Reflector. That's probably know.
And some cool samples here. One's called Digger, so it's basically a Balderdash clone. Another one, which is a text editor, so it looks like it's even more fully featured than something like Emacs. no IntelliSense, no IntelliTrace yet.
Ooh, yeah.
So it probably won't replace my day-to-day IDE.
But why I think this is cool, too, it's one of those applications, and we do this a lot, kind of like the example I'd say is Kazaml, where it's the two-pane view, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like whatever code you do here is actually executed on the canvas. So if you want to play around with canvas and say, for example, do a loop that every, you know, whatever fraction of a second blinks lights, because you like blink.
There we go, bringing it back.
Yeah, so, you know, you do something that basically divides by, you know, whatever frame per second, 60 frames per second, it does this. So every 2 seconds, the lights switch, for example.
A 60 hertz blink tag? Come on, that's crazy.
Are you blinking faster or are you blinking slower?
No, I need like 2 hertz. I need like two blinks a minute.
Frames per second. You have 30 frames per second.
How fast? Oh, per minute. Hertz is per minute, isn't it?
Yeah. That's okay. What I'm asking.
60. I like it. Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. So I was blinking every 2 seconds.
Yeah. Okay.
With 30 frames per second, that's 60. Okay.
That's right.
So, but the point is, you can. No one cares.
No
one cares about our blink tag. But you can actually see how to do it. And another example is the HTML. Another HTML5 one, which is doing sort of a drawing surface, kind of the way you do a PowerPoint slide of an org chart,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, there's one and there's sub-nodes and there's sub-nodes of the sub-nodes.
Or a mind map, but if you will.
Yeah, so you can double-click and it does the drag and dropping and the rearranging and stuff.
Cool.
All open source. And you can play with them online, too.
Cool.
Love it. But I do want Visual Studio in the cloud.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Not just TF5.
Completely written in HTML5. Probably yeah. Not going to happen. So, Windows Phone 7 for Azure Toolkit.
Mm-hmm. What I'll do is give you basically the high-level things of what this is trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Wade Wagner and some of the folks, what they want to do is make it really easy for Windows Phone 7 developers to build applications that talk to Azure. So this is more, the first thing is project templates that include the connections and all the stuff that you'd need to connect and get access from WP7 data in Azure,
mm-hmm.
and it includes a sample app. The sample app is really almost like your Azure browser, is the best way to say it. So you do the login, and as you can see just in some of the screenshots here, you can actually access and see a list of your Azure tables, you can see a list of your blobs,
mm-hmm.
and all the information within there. They need to have like a small box so you can do like select star from whatever, because that would be awesome for
sure.
Like, Duncan to delete me as a user
yeah.
remotely from his phone.
But once you know how to access that data and browse it, you could then take that data and consume it and use it to visualize on your phone and
yeah,
really
so
do
you,
whatever you want with
it's
it.
It's really, how do you make it so that Windows Phone 7 developers can easily access cloud mm-hmm. data, and this is the way to do it.
Right.
So if you're building WP7 apps, definitely check this out, especially if they have an Azure backend.
Right, and there's a lot of intricacies when you're publishing to Azure and then trying to run on the phone. Like, how do you deal with certificates? Where do you store usernames and passwords? So take a look at the toolkit. It'll address those types of things.
Fourth and Mayor Foursquare app.
Yeah, so I'm not a Foursquare guy, but I know it's pretty popular.
Yeah, so one of the things, this is Jeff Wilcox's post.
Mm-hmm.
He talks through an app called Fourth and Mayor. So if you're a WP7 phone, maybe this has been on Hot Apps. I haven't been following lately. But this is the hot Foursquare client. So it's done by Jeff, not done by the folks at Foursquare.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things they announced at South by Southwest was that they were going to support what's called leaderboards. And leaderboard is, Foursquare, you do check-ins at a certain place.
Right.
Say, you know, we both work in Building 24. You do check-ins at Building 24, and it keeps.
Or I saw you were checking in at the state penitentiary recently, right?
I just do that for fun.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So ixnay on the.
We can edit that.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you check in.
So you check in.
You get a point.
And, yeah, it gives you a point, and then you can have leaderboards for who's done the most check-ins at that location.
Okay.
Right? So that's a feature that they just added. It basically took them 30 minutes. To build and add that feature of leaderboards directly into Windows Phone 7.
Wow.
So he's saying, like, dude, this is awesome.
Yeah.
All this stuff is JSON data. I'll walk you through how to do templates because this isn't the same implementation, Silverlight 3 versus Silverlight 4. So a cool post, lots of code, but really it's just a cool app. I think that's the other thing that you a lot of times you don't get to see the code behind cool apps.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a great example, and it's using JSON.NET libraries that we've talked about before.
That's great. Yeah, congratulations to Jeff. You can tell he's put a lot of passion into this.
Yeah, I think he said that his blog post was 60 minutes to prepare. Doing the actual app was 30. So
wow.
So nice. Very cool stuff.
So this is a South by Southwest trip report from
Robbie Ingerbretson from
right?
Pixel Labs.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so one of the interesting things that came out here, he kind of goes through and rolls up all the different types of things that you may want to be looking out for if you're a web developer.
Yeah, things that he personally worked on, mm-hmm. the Star.me, the ZFrank app.
Yep.
And then ThinkJS, which I think was really interesting too.
Right, so if you're doing anything with Canvas, you want to take a look at ThinkJS because it gives you a lot of the starter blocks, if you will, for creating really cool Canvas apps like what we just saw in Lutz's blog, but also like the Agent 008 Ball, Throwing Stars, a lot of these HTML5 Canvas apps that are really coming out and starting to kind of surprise people in terms of what you can actually do with them.
This is really cool. I want to play with this.
Yeah.
I want to play with this using Lutz's tool, though.
That's right, yeah. There you go. Next.
Next is tuples. All right, I'm going to do... tuples is a new data type. So
in .NET 4?
.NET 4.
Okay.
What it allows you to do is have 1 to 8 generic data types associated with it, right? So, like, normally if I have a list, I can only have one data type. So a list of, and I need to define that data type. So it'd be like an int,
mm-hmm.
a string. But what if I need an int and a string?
Mm.
What do I do?
Use a tuple?
You could use a tuple. Maybe use a dictionary. So tuple lets you define 1 to, I think it's n, and n being like 8 data types. So instead of building own custom type to hold things like an integer, a double, a string, and a character, you get real runtime, so you're not doing this weird object thing. You're not some data type for something that isn't actually related. So it's very handy when you need it, especially the example that I ran across it was where I had a key where I wanted to have basically a dictionary type, and a dictionary had this weird key that it was a combination of user ID and GUID, or user ID and an enum value that needed to map to a specific GUID, right? Because which one should I use as the key? Which one should I use as the value? The value is the GUID, but I can only have one kind of lookup using the dictionary data type. Well, that kind of sucks. What I can do is put everything in a tuple and then do simple link queries across them, a collection of them. Of course.
So this is a walkthrough of, hey, I'm brand new to tuples, but here's
How to program tuples. Here's how you can now use tuple in regular conversation.
Got it. Yeah, my girlfriend's going to love that.
Yes. Yeah. Tuple's like a car that can hold 8 people.
It can hold
8 different type of people.
It sounds like a breakfast cereal.
Tuples.
Yeah, now with more whatever.
Vinegar.
More generics. Okay.
Excellent.
Employee Info Starter Kit.
So a Sharafel alum sent me an email. He's got a new version of the Employee Information Starter Kit.
ASP.NET.
ASP.NET, all open source, jQuery. Entity framework, so people that are looking for entity framework, ASP.NET examples, I think this is a good one to check out. Tuple templates.
EF4.1.
EF4.0.
Okay.
So it's probably not code first, but maybe he'll comment and tell us whether he's going to add that. So the typical things you do with a sort of list management site, right? So it's like I'm adding employees, I'm listing employees, I'm sorting by employees, I'm doing data validation, all the things that you'd want to see.
I'm laying them off, I'm firing them, I'm docking their pay. Yep. Got it. Awesome.
This is just, you know, casual Thursday for you.
Yeah, exactly.
this is why they don't
let me have employees. All right.
Good stuff. And then also the other thing is just browser testing, which I think just doing the Safari, Chrome, Firefox, Opera, IE, Dance is always tough. So that could be interesting to see if within his app he writes the code. The nice thing is it's also documented, so you can get the walkthrough of the app.
Cool.
And how to set up.
Cool. Picks of the week. So this is actually kind of a mea culpa that Brian Harry posted with respect to Team Foundation Server 2010. Actually, it's Visual Studio 2010 Service Pack 1. So we just released Service Pack 1.
Yes.
And basically what they tried to do here is they went through and added a performance optimization kind of in the 11th hour of getting SP1 ready to ship. And that performance optimization had some unintended side effects if you are viewing a build report that was generated by Team Foundation Server 2008. And unintended side effects is kind of a down statement. It actually causes VS to crash. So hopefully not a lot of people are going to encounter this scenario, but if you use VS 2010 SP1 with TFS 2008 and you use Team Build and you need to be able to view those build reports, you'll want to go grab this hotfix right away. And the hotfix patches that problem and makes it go away. But obviously, you know, apologies to anybody who encounters this and loses data as a result, because obviously it brings down VS.
Cool. So the two situations where you have to have two things. VS 2010 SP1
and more specifically, it's Team Explorer. So if you're using Team Explorer, which is an add-in to Visual Studio, and you have applied to SP1.
And then the second thing is TFS 2008
with Team Build enabled.
With Team Build enabled.
Right.
Okay. Good stuff.
Yeah.
My pick of the week is Dentaku's spectral frequency. So he launched a picture of us and through a spectral frequency analyzer and has a nice MP3 file. This is awesome.
Yeah, definitely. We were kind of joking around about what would happen if people, you know, kind of went through and did this. So hats off to Dentaku for taking this upon himself to do.
It's and cool. I think the way this works is it goes left to right. So you'll hear it, and there's a point where it kind of peaks, and I'm pretty sure that's my nose.
Yes,
I'm pretty sure. is my nose, and we will play you off with that wonderful sound effect, and thank you, Vinta.
See you next week.